Today we begin week number 34 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word, verse by verse. I invite you to open to the book of Leviticus, chapter number 25, for our starting point today. Remember that the book of Leviticus is a rule book for Levites. It's a tech manual. It's got a lot of details that the Levites and the priests needed to know to carry out their jobs exactly as God wanted them to do. But it also includes a lot of information that they're supposed to pass on to the Israelis as a whole to make sure that the Jewish people are the incubator for the coming of HaMashiach, the coming of the Messiah. So they've got to get things going in such a way that the Jewish nation will be in place with the provision of prophetic books and prophetic things pointing toward the Messiah all the way up until the time that Jesus comes on the scene. And so one of the things we'll look at today is the arrangement of their calendar system. And the system that the Jewish people use today is a slight variation on this, by the way, because during the time after the New Testament, they codified, they made rules as to how the calendar system should work that fit their Pharisaic mindset to avoid certain holidays falling on certain days of the week. So as I describe some of these things to you from the scripture, I want you to keep in mind that their calendar system was very much tied to the observance of the seasons and of the moon phases as they saw them. And so let's go ahead and begin in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 1. Then he who is spoke to Moses at Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and say to them, when you come into the land which I shall give you, then the land shall have a Sabbath to he who is. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its crop. But during the seventh year, the land shall have a Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to he who is. You shall not sow your field nor prune your vineyard." So we already know that the Israelites were given a protected day off every week. And this was in large part a response to what had happened to them in Egypt. They were being treated as slaves. They didn't get the time off. They were basically just worked to death. And so the first thing that God does is tell them, you will take off one day every week, and you will not force people to have to work 7 days a week. You'll give them this protected day off. So that's where we get the idea of the Sabbath. It's a one-week period. The seventh day is the day for the rest on the calendar. And it, for the Jewish calendar, it fell from sunset on Friday till sunset on Saturday. It is tied in the book of Exodus to the creation week, because that's where 7 days in a week came from, is that it took God 6 days to carry out. I shouldn't say it took him, but he took 6 days to do all of his creative work. And then the seventh day he declared that was the day off. That was no more work on this day. This is a day to reflect upon what's happened. It is very good. So there is something similar now that is going to be put into place for a 7 year period. And it is interesting, if you do the work, you will find out that before the flood occurred and changed the lunar month and the lunar year and the solar year, that there was a 360-day solar year. And it was divided into 12 30-day lunar months. And if you start that calendar on the first day of the week and then just keep going, It is interesting that it will repeat exactly every 7 years. So the 7-year period that we're looking at here is actually kind of a nod back to the repeating 7-year cycle that existed before the flood. The flood changed things so that we now have a 365.24 something or other solar year, and it's a 29 point something lunar month. So the Israelis had a calendar system where they would have either a 29 or a 30-day month based on the sighting of the first visible crescent of the new moon. And then they would either have a 12-month year, and that happened pretty much 2 years in a row. And then they would have to have a 13-month year to make up for the difference in order to keep the seasons in sync. So all of that will be programmed into this next thing where they take off every 7th year and give the land a chance to recoup, to get its recovery back under itself. So verse number 3, 6 years you shall sow your field. So you'll go out there and you'll do whatever you need to do in the fall to get the ground ready. And then you throw the seed out there for the grain into the soil. And then you'll have to keep doing other things to it to get ready for the harvest the next spring. And then 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its crop. So the vineyards, they produce their fruit in the summer. And then you would have to spend the time in the fall and the winter getting things all prepared for the next summer's fruit. Well, in the 7th year, this is what happened. Verse 4. During the 7th year, the land shall have a Sabbath rest. A rest or a Sabbath to he who is. You shall not sow your field nor prune your vineyard. So you don't do any of that work as an Israeli in the 7th year. The land is allowed to just do its own thing. You don't till it. You don't prune branches on the vineyard vines. You don't go out there and trim your trees. Nothing like that. You just let it go wild for a year. Verse 5, your harvests after growth. Now, this is the idea of what it gives on its own. It's volunteer growth. When you're out there gathering the grain crop, you can't help but drop a lot of the seeds out of the grain heads onto the ground. And you don't pick them up. You just leave them where they're at. And so that's going to grow up the next year. And you're not allowed to reap that officially. Your harvest after growth you shall not reap. Your grapes of untrimmed vines you shall not gather. So just because you're not out there pruning on the vines or pruning on the trees doesn't mean that they won't produce fruit. They will. They'll produce it on their own. But you're not allowed to have an official harvest of that crop, that volunteer crop. The land shall have a sabbatical year. Verse 6, all of you shall have the Sabbath products of the land for fruit, yourself and your male and female slaves, your hired men, and your foreign resident, those who live as aliens with you. Even your cattle and the animals that are in your land shall have all its crops to eat. Now, what does that mean? It means that you don't go out there and have an official harvest, but when the harvest is ready, you can go out day by day and harvest from it, just what you need for that day. For example, you decide you want to have some grapes for breakfast. And it's the season of grapes. It's the Sabbath year. So you just go out into the grape vineyard that's closest to you. Just snip off a couple of bunches and bring them into your house. And that's what you eat for that day. If you decide to do it again later in the week, you can do that. It doesn't even have to be your field, because everybody gets to use, as the days progress during the harvest time of the Sabbath year, they use whatever's out there as the volunteer crop. Nobody cuts it up and puts it in storage for themselves. If you're wanting to make bread and it's barley season, the barley's ripe, you just walk out to the barley field, chop down whatever you think is going to yield the kernels that you need to make the flour for that day. You do your own little threshing and do your winnowing, grind it all up, make the bread for the day, and that's your Sabbath year harvest. It's day by day as you need it. Your animals are hungry. You chop a little bit of the grain field that's near you and throw it in for them to eat. Everybody just eats for the moment. They don't put any of it away for storage. And there is another year, though, that's going to be added to the calendar system that will be based on the number 7 as well. Verse number 8. You are also to count off 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself. So you've got a Sabbath every 7th year. So you take 7 of those cycles, and that's going to be 49 years, right? 7 times 7 years, so that you have the time of the 7 Sabbaths of years, namely 49 years. Verse 9, you shall then sound a ram's horn abroad on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall sound a horn all through your land. All right, so you've had the 7th sabbatical year. So it's the 49th year. It's come to the tail end of it. And you are now going to begin, because the agricultural years, by the way, I almost forgot to mention that. The agricultural years for the Jewish people always began in the fall with the 7th month of the year. So the 7th month rolls around and you switch from the 49th year into the 50th year. So that would happen on the Feast of Trumpets, which is the first day of the 7th month. 10 days later comes Yom Kippur, which we've talked about. Yom Kippur is all about rededicating the tabernacle or rededicating the temple to the atonement for sin. And so Yom Kippur becomes the day of solemn reflection that I need to be redeemed by the blood of the Lamb that is offered in this place, or I will have to pay for my own sins. So Yom Kippur, day of fasting, day of contemplation. Well, as the 50th year begins, which, by the way, is also the first year of the next 49-year cycle. When the 50th year begins, on the day of Yom Kippur, they sound a special trumpet on that day. Verse 10, you shall thus consecrate the 50th year and proclaim a release throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee to you. And this is a word that's based on the idea of blowing the trumpet. And each of you shall return to his own property, and each of you shall return to his own family. Now, what's this about? Well, you could lease out your family's property for somebody else to grow crops on it during the cycles of years of your life. You might decide, I'm not much of a farmer. I don't want to deal with growing crops on my land. And so you lease out to another group or another person the ability to use your land for a certain amount of money. Well, when the 50th year comes around, all land leases end. And everybody reverts back to their home sequence. That is, the land is always passing down a very specific line of inheritance within the families. And so no matter what happens during the 49 years in between, it could shift several times who's farming that land. When year number 50 comes around, whoever is supposed to be the heir of that property now resumes control of it. So all land leases are finished. Verse number 11. You shall have the 50th year as a jubilee. That's the blowing of the trumpets again. You shall not sow nor reap its aftergrowth, nor gather in from its untrimmed vines, for it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat its crops out of the field. So the jubilee year, the 50th year, is treated just like a sabbatical year, which means year 49 of this cycle and year 50 of this cycle are going to be 2 years in a row that you don't have an official gathering in of the crops. It's everybody is just eating whatever is out there on a day-by-day basis. And that means you basically have to have stored up enough extra to get you through 2 years of no official crops, plus all of the time it takes to grow the next crop, which is the crop in the second year of the next cycle. Now, let's get back to talking about the land leases that are described next. Verse 13. On this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his own property. If you make a sale, moreover, to your friend or buy from your friend's hand, you shall not wrong one another. Corresponding to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy from your friend. He is to sell to you according to the number of years of crops. So this is where we find out it's not really the sale of the land. It's the sale of the crops that are grown on that land until the next jubilee is supposed to be coming. And you should also take in consideration there are seven sabbaticals that take place during that 49-year period. So let's use a good example, a nice simple one. Let's suppose you decide in year 48 that you don't really want to work the land. So you sell the right of growing the crop to a neighbor. Well, he should only pay you for 1 year's crop because that's all he's going to be able to get out of it before the Sabbath comes, the sabbatical year, the 49th year, followed by the 50th year of Jubilee. Now, what if he sells it to you in the very beginning of the Jubilee cycle, like year number 2 of 49? Well, then he needs to be able to sit down with you and calculate how many different crops of what sort of value he is likely to get out of it until the next Jubilee ends the leasing period. So that's what it's talking about here, is don't cheat each other. Think about the fact that all land leases end at the time of the Jubilee, and you're really only selling the crop ability of that land, not the land itself, because it will go back to the proper family line. You might have sold it, and then you die. Your son, your heir, is going to be the one that will likely get it back, or possibly your grandson through that son will be getting the property back. Continuing, verse number 16, in proportion to the extent of years, you shall increase its price, and in proportion to the fewness of years, you shall diminish its price, for it is a number of crops he is selling to you. For you shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am he who is your God. So the land actually belongs to God. He is giving it to certain families, certain sections of it to certain families to use for the growing of crops. And those families, God says, do have the right to sell that growing ability to other people, but they can't really sell the land because it was not theirs to sell. And so this is a principle that comes out in some of the prophetic passages. And it's also something we should be aware of as far as Jesus is concerned. And that is, the land of Israel technically belongs to Jesus. And so he will be coming back someday in order to claim it for himself. And it doesn't matter how many times it's changed hands in between, it still belongs to Jesus, always has belonged to Jesus. And the people who had control of it had no right to sell the land, only the ability to grow crops on it. Verse number 18, you shall thus observe my statutes and keep my judgments so as to carry them out that you may live securely on the land. And then the land will yield its produce so that you can eat your fill and live securely in it. So this is the agreement that God is making with the Israelis. If you do according to my instructions, then you have the right to live on the land and eat off of it and to even lease out the growing ability to other people. Verse number 20. But if you say, well, what are we going to eat on the seventh year if we don't sow or gather in our crops? Then I will order my blessings for you in the sixth year that it will bring forth the crop for 3 years. So this is God's answer to anyone that says, wow, how are we supposed to get through from the end of year six, when we've just brought in the crop on our own, until the end of year one of the next cycle? That's a long time to get through on just stored up grain. And God's response is, as long as you're living by my standards and according to my moral code, I will give you really good crops in the years leading up to the sixth year, and you'll have more than enough to get you through 3 full years of eating until that first year crop of the next cycle is ready to be harvested. Verse 22, when you're sowing the eighth year, you will still eat old things from the crop, eating the old until the ninth year when its crop comes in. And that's just the sequence that he's trying to put forth. What he refers to here is the eighth year. That's the first year of the next cycle. And then the ninth year would be the beginning of the second year of that next cycle. That's when you're really going to need the food in order to do all of the work to get that next group in. All right. The land, moreover, shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine, but you are but aliens and sojourners with me. Exactly what I was explaining a little while ago. The land belongs to God, and everybody else is just, they're just farmholders. They are land lease people. God has given them the right to grow it. Thus, for every piece of your property, you are to provide for the redemption of the land. And so this is why you're not supposed to let the land be sold outside of the Israeli families, because it belongs to God. Verse 25, if a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back what his relative has sold. So let's suppose you're in the Judah tribe and you're going through a rough patch. And so you have to lease out your property and not be on it anymore. Somebody in the Judah tribe that's a relative of yours should want to jump in and help you with that to keep it all in the family. I think we're particularly thinking here about not selling it to foreigners. Verse 26, or in case of a man who has no kinsman, but so recovers his means as to find sufficient for its redemption, then he shall calculate the years since its sale and refund the balance to the man to whom he has sold it, and so return to his property. So this is all just ratios to figure out what the land is worth. But if he has not found sufficient means to get it back for himself, then what he has sold shall remain in the hand of its purchaser until the year of Jubilee, but as the Jubilee, it shall revert, that he may return to his property. Exactly what we were talking about before. Now, there are some exceptions to this. We were talking about agricultural land that is going to be having this rule of Jubilee applied to it. Verse 29, likewise, if a man sells a dwelling house in a walled city, then his redemption right remains valid until a full year from its sale. His right of redemption lasts a full year. But if it's not bought back for him within the space of a full year, then the house that is in the walled city passes permanently to its purchaser through its generations. It does not revert to in the Jubilee. So property inside of walled cities is not agricultural. So you've got 1 year for someone to either help you redeem it, or you buy it back yourself, or it's a permanent sale. That's the way it was supposed to work with the Israelis. Verse 31. The houses in the villages, however, which have no surrounding wall, shall be considered as open fields. They have redemption rights and revert in the Jubilee. So this is where we find out the distinction in the Old Testament between a village and a city. Cities had well-defined walls. Villages did not. Villages were considered to be part of the farm structure of Israel. It was agricultural land. So the Jubilee rule applied to little houses that you might sell during a time of need. You could get it back in the year of Jubilee if you didn't redeem it prior to that. Well, we're not quite done with these rules, so I'll see you tomorrow, the next time we're into God's Word.